Stella Nickel. Ever heard of her? If you have, then you know she's a total piece of shit. If you have not, well, she's a real piece of shit, you guys. Almost straight out the gate, this lady is a hot mess and eventually over time turned pretty cold-blooded. This insidious woman has been featured on a shit ton of television shows like Forensic Files, Snapped, and even two episodes of Deadly Women. So let me spill all the tea I know on Mrs. Stella Nickel's bitch ass and what's known as the Seattle, Washington Excedrin murders. What's up, guys? It's your girl, Ginger, the true crime queen. I'm reminding you now that listener discretion is advised. The dark nature of this show is not suitable for little ears or those who are sensitive to graphic material. But without further ado, let's get it. Welcome back, everyone. Today's case is a nice little lesson on why those silver liners on our pain medication from the store is such an absolute must. And obviously, you've probably gathered that they are to prevent assholes from tampering with the stuff that we buy. But back in the 80s, it took a handful of people dying to get those super tamper-proof lids implemented for everything. Today, I'm going to talk about one of those major incidents where innocent people would lose their lives due to the selfish acts of just one person, who made us take a closer look at what can happen if those lids were never implemented. Born as Stella Maudine Stevenson in Colton, Oregon, back in August 7th of 1943, Stella has always been described as growing up poor, but not much more than that. The only other example of how poor that was that she would often stay the night in different motels with her own not super stable mother. In 1959, at the age of 16, Stella became pregnant and later ended up having a little girl named Cynthia. And I believe that Stella was very much in and out of Cindy's early life, and Cynthia says she too often spent nights in motels with her mother, Stella. At one point even, Stella had taken off to California, leaving the young Cynthia in the care of her grandma, Stella's mother, the one who was also allegedly not such a good mom. I learned that when Stella moved to California, she actually ended up marrying and having another daughter who I haven't seen named. And Stella had a terrible habit of getting herself into trouble with the law. In 1968, she was charged with fraud and ended up serving 6 months in jail for it. The following year, in 1969, Stella would earn herself a child abuse charge from reportedly beating her daughter Cindy with a curtain rod in the face. You know what she had to do for that, though? Just some court-ordered family counseling. And how appropriate, right? Wrong. That is so fucking wrong. About 2 years after that, she is again charged, this time with forgery. At age 31, Stella meets a man named Bruce Nickel, and they actually end up getting married after 2 years of dating. They started out their relationship drinking heavily together until Bruce actually decided to sober up, which really put Stella, who has quite a drinking habit herself, into a bit of a rock and a hard place. She starts complaining that he's, quote, a bore, so she started picking up extra shifts at her job as a security screener for the Seattle-Tacoma International Airport, as well as picked up a new interest in fish and began putting together an aquarium to keep herself busy rather than out bar hopping. Bruce was said to be a heavy machine operator for work, which often incurred headaches after a long day on the job, and as he did almost every single day, Bruce had taken 4 extra strength Excedrin capsules, stepped out onto his back deck, and collapsed onto the floor. He was immediately rushed to the Bay Harbor Medical Center in Auburn, Washington, and pronounced dead shortly after the arrival on June 5th of 1986. The attending physicians would determine that his varying underlying health conditions likely caused the death of Bruce Nickel, citing emphysema as the official cause of death. He was buried shortly after, and the case would normally lay to rest with him. However, Stella Nickel is a money-hungry bitch, and just days after her husband's death, Stella learned she would not be awarded an additional accidental life payout of $100,000, being that Bruce's death was ruled to be of natural causes. And because $76,000 isn't enough for this butt plug of a woman, she went out and placed three more bottles of laced Excedrin back out on random store shelves so that someone would hopefully take one and die and spark the news that there's contaminated medication claiming the lives of innocent people, allowing Stella the avenue to reopen her husband's case and get that shmoney. And this is exactly what got her scheming ass caught up. So 5 days later, on the early morning of June 11th, Sue Snow, a recently remarried, beautiful mother of two teenage daughters, as well as the successful vice president at a local bank in the area, was getting ready for work at her bathroom vanity when she took two Excedrin capsules around 6:30 a.m. Her 15-year-old daughter then came to find her mother on the bathroom floor, eyes open, semi-rolled back, she said appearing absolutely frightened and that her fingers were clenched really tight. With a slight pulse at the time of the ambulance arriving, she was also rushed to the Bay Harbor Medical Center, where she passed shortly after arrival as well. And being that she was only a 36-year-old woman in seemingly great health, a more thorough autopsy was to be performed. And upon dissection, the attending assistant autopsy technician physically smells the telltale signs of cyanide poisoning, the sickeningly sweet smell of bitter almonds, and subsequent blood tests of Sue Snow would confirm the presence of cyanide in her system, indicating that her death was a direct result of acute cyanide poisoning. What's really interesting about that little bit, though, is that it's reportedly only 20 to 40% of the population has that gene that allows them to smell the sweet scent of bitter almonds, or more specifically, the smell of cyanide. So had a different autopsy technician had been the one working on Sue Snow that day, the presence of cyanide might not have ever been discovered. It just so happens that as police become aware of this information about the cyanide in Sue's blood, Sue Snow's own sister had realized something odd about the Excedrin herself when she went to take some before her sister's funeral. She found it odd that they were encapsulated forms rather than Sue's preferred tablet form. Upon questioning, investigators focused a little more on Sue's new husband, who admitted that he was the one who recently asked them to try capsules instead of tablets. Upon testing, three of the 60 total capsules left were said to contain four times the amount of necessary cyanide to kill someone. Sue's teenage daughter Haley also pointed out a few things that didn't sit right with her at the time about her stepdad that actually even had her suspecting his possible involvement. But luckily for him, Stella Nickel fucked up many times during her attempt of what she thought would be the perfect crime. After police went out and combed every single store in the Auburn, Washington area, they found two additional bottles found to have evidence of tampering. So obviously, as a precaution, the manufacturer of Excedrin pain medication, Bristol-Myers, then urged an immediate recall of all their products from the store shelves in Washington State, later the entire country. The commissioner of the FDA even cautioned those who had previously purchased Excedrin to not take it and just dispose of it, just as a precautionary. Fearing the very similar yet unsolved case of the 1982 Chicago area Tylenol murders, the FBI feared this was a copycat criminal, but still had to confirm that cross-contamination wasn't an inside job of some sort either. So they actually fly down to Morrisville, North Carolina, where the contaminated lots of Excedrin were packaged for distribution. And after a thorough inspection, they came to find no presence of cyanide within the entire plant, eliminating the possibility of someone there being responsible for the tampering. Soon after, though, a $300,000 reward is being offered by a group of drug companies that are affected by the recall for any information leading to the person or persons responsible for tampering with consumer products, now that it's been confirmed it's not a manufacturing error. Well, not long after the media scare of the poisoned Excedrin hits the news on June 19th, Stella fucking Nickel takes the opportunity she's been waiting for to inform the authorities that the recent death of her husband might also be connected to the recall, being that he actually died shortly after taking some Excedrin, actually. Investigators come straight to Stella's home, where she hands over two bottles of Excedrin that she claims she purchased from two different stores at two different times. And both of those fucking bottles tested positive, you guys. So police and FBI are obviously like, what are the fucking odds of that? We can only find five bottles in the entire country that seem to have been tampered with, and yet this woman had the extraordinary luck to just so happen to buy two of them. She's either legit the unluckiest woman ever, or she might just have something to do with it. So the police opt to offer both Sue Snow's husband as well as Stella Nickel the opportunity to take a polygraph test to clear themselves of suspicion in the now considered product tampering investigation. Sue's husband accepts this offer and actually passes, clearing him from the list. However, Stella would continually refuse offers to take a lie detector test, citing that she was too emotionally upset over Bruce's death to accept a polygraph examination. But that does not stop her from filing a wrongful death suit along with Sue Snow's husband in the hopes of taking Bristol-Myers to court for the deaths of their spouses. So upon further analysis of the actual capsules themselves, and they reportedly x-rayed some like 70,000 recalled pills, the forensic testing finds these tiny green-colored crystals somewhat mixed in with the cyanide powder. Forensic analysis were able to determine that the green crystals they were finding were actually a commercially produced algicide found to be branded Algae Destroyer. Investigators now believe that it's possible Stella might have stupidly crushed up her Algae Destroyer tablets within the same mortar and pestle that she used to crush up the cyanide in, and obviously didn't bother to wash them between uses. So she unknowingly cross-contaminated the cyanide and the algicide when doing the dirty deed. Investigators then go out and comb about 58 different places, they said on one show, to local pet stores and aquarium shops in the area, hoping to find someone that would remember Stella's face and possibly who sold it to her. They get lucky when the owner of the fish gallery recalls dealing with Stella and informs them that he likes to tell all the customers that buy this particular product that it works much better in the fish tanks if you crush it up rather than just drop it in the tablet. So police are like, oh my fucking God, you guys, we have this bitch in the bag, but we need more. So they begin looking at her recently paid out insurance claims, finding additional ones that had been denied. It seems as though Stella had multiple claims on Bruce's life, totaling to about $76,000. There was another with an additional $100,000 payout in the event of an accidental death. Well, this is making a lot of sense now. The FBI takes these signed documents to their handwriting analyst, and he finds that at least two of Bruce Nichols' signatures on five documents total had, in his opinion, appeared forged when compared to his driver's license and other signature samples. This handwriting analysis went further to explain that some of the forged characteristics actually match those he found within the signatures of Stella herself on the same documents. And I'm sure her prior history of forgery charges are not looking good right now, but just saying. When investigators finally decide to confront Stella with a grip of mounting evidence against her and once again offer her a chance to excuse herself as a suspect by simply taking a polygraph, she finally accepts, and guess what, you guys? She failed! I bet you thought I was going to say passed, but nope, she failed because she's guilty as fuck, you guys. And motherfucking Cindy, her daughter, for the win, y'all, because she actually came forward to police in January of 1987, just a couple months after her mom failed lie detector tests, and spills all the damn tea she has on her mom. Which, good for her, because remember that one time that Stella beat her in the face with a curtain rod? Yeah, Stella had it coming. Her daughter Cindy informs police that as mother and daughter, Cindy had often engaged in conversations with her where she would state she wanted Bruce dead. Cindy tells them her mom Stella even tried to do it once before, but tried using a different poison and was unsuccessful. Her mom would talk about all the ways they could spend the insurance money after he was gone, and even told them that they could probably find her fingerprints all over some of the books from the public library regarding the topic of poisons and cyanide. So of course, they go down to the Auburn Public Library, and upon being subpoenaed, investigators learn that Stella had previously checked out multiple incriminating titles, seizing them and, yes, locating her fat fingerprints all over the pages covering cyanide. She even checked out one book called Human Poisoning from Nature and Cultivated Plants, which was at that point actually still overdue and most likely in her possession. So like real fucking casual, Stella. Finally, Stella Nickel is officially indicted by a federal grand jury and subsequently arrested on December 9th of 1987 on five counts of product tampering, two of those resulting in the death of Bruce Nickel and Sue Snow. Stella would wait 4 months in federal custody until her trial began in April of 1988, and Stella was found guilty on all five counts of product tampering on May 9th after five whole days of jury deliberation. A year and a half after her conviction, Stella's lawyers were seeking a mistrial in her case on the grounds of judicial misconduct and jury tampering. It was found that during her original trial, one of the jurors had also previously been a plaintiff in a similar case with Pepperidge Farm when a pill was baked into a cracker. Her lawyers feel as though that information should have been disclosed during the time of jury selection and might have swayed the jury's verdict in any type of way. This petition for a mistrial was obviously denied by the U.S. Court of Appeals, but her lawyers tried a different route in the second attempt in 2001, citing that the FBI actually withheld some very crucial documents from the defense at the time of her trial, but this was also denied. Stella Nickel was ultimately sentenced to 2 terms of 90 years for the counts of tampering that led to death, and then 3 10-year terms for the additional counts of product tampering, all to be served concurrently, as well as what was described as a small fine. But also, she had to forfeit her remaining financial assets to the families of her victims. And overall, I would think that means that she got about 210 years total, and she was somehow eligible for parole in 2018 when she was a dried out 75 years old, but she's still currently housed at the all-women minimum security federal correctional institution of Dublin, California, which is apparently in the San Francisco area of Cali. She does not have any current parole hearing scheduled, but she does have a projected release date, actually, said to be another 20 years on July 10th of 2040, when she is 97 years old. Stella has always asserted that she was wrongfully convicted. She claims that her daughter, Cynthia, only made up lies about her mother's involvement to be rewarded with the $300,000 that was being offered, which Cindy did reportedly receive about $250,000 of that. And I'm guessing the other $50,000 went to the fish store owner, but I have absolutely no idea about that. It's just a guess. Interestingly, though, because the crime was handled in the federal courts, Stella could actually be charged specifically by the state of Washington for the deaths of Bruce Nickel and Sue Snow, though they have yet to do so, and really no reason since she's already in there for basically the rest of her life, unless she happens to survive her 97th birthday. But now you know exactly why it's so important to double-check those annoying little silver liners on her medication bottles. Back in 1983, the United States Congress had passed a new regulation known as the Tylenol Bill, which reconsidered the criminal act of consumer product tampering a federal crime. And it was in 1989 that the Food and Drug Administration would publish federal guidelines for manufacturers of consumer products to provide those products in tamper-proof packaging. And that was all in an effort to curb future incidents of copycat criminals. So I'm just going to throw out a little reminder that you can catch me live streaming every Thursday night at 9 p.m. You can bring a drink and come chat with me. Extra points if you bring tacos. And I have 2 quick shout outs real quick to Sandy and Shay. Thank you so much for listening, Sandy. And Shay, thank you so much for the 5-star Apple review. I really, really appreciate it, you guys. I am forever grateful. So all right, everyone, as always, stay safe, lock your damn doors, return your shopping carts. And have a great week, everybody. Make sure to stay safe. That was the tea. I hope you enjoyed my rendition of the story, and if so, please tell all your creepy friends about it. You can find the sources I use for the episode in its description. You can find me slinging those memes on Instagram at True Crime Queen. Check them out if you need some laughs after all the dark shit. If you'd like to support the podcast, consider buying me a coffee so I can keep making the killer ass content. You see what I did there? All right, you guys. Bye.